Hi there, I'm Veronica Wilhelm, and I'm here to tell you how to have the best day ever at work. Hello, and welcome to episode 4. This season, we're exploring the idea of when you come to and you realize you've drifted pretty far from where you started and you don't want to be drifting anymore. You're lost out at sea. You've been taken out by a riptide. How do you get back? Well, as we learned last episode, you definitely don't swim against the current because you'll drown, and we don't want to drown. So a recap from this season, in case you're just joining us now for the first time, hello and welcome. First, in episode 1, we talked about the concept of how did I get here? What does it mean? And it's this idea that you kind of come to, you notice that you have drifted really far from where you want to be, how you want your life to feel and exist. And so you have to figure out how to get back to where you want to be. And we notice that in those moments, we seek sort of automatic responses in trying to soothe ourselves. Because it turns out our brain is pretty lazy. Neurotransmitters cost a lot to make, and so it will often look for quick releases of dopamine or serotonin to try and make us feel a little bit better when we realize we've sort of had this stress response, this sort of subtle stress response. So we talked a little bit about what are the sort of subtle reactive ways that you might be soothing. And I noted that one of the things that I do is sort of compulsively open Facebook and like check Facebook. And actually just yesterday, I finally put a like time limit on Facebook on my phone. And immediately it was like, you've already reached this limit. So lesson learned. Thank you, phone. I will try to do better. We also noticed that for me, at least I reach for sweet snacks. And Bethany talked about how she reaches for salty snacks and how much better it is to soothe our nervous system when we try on these sort of intentional responses, intentional soothing, as opposed to the reactive automatic soothing. There are some standard ways of doing this that are well known and also are well documented to be good options for us. And that includes drinking water, going for a walk, taking deep breaths, and then doing grounding exercises so that way we can kind of notice what's happening around us. And I know even I, as I'm saying those things, I kind of roll my eyes at them. They feel sort of trite and like, you know, not very exciting. But it turns out they're not very exciting because they work. They always work when we do these kinds of things. So implementing those opportunities for more intentional soothing, rather reactionary soothing, is much better for our nervous system. And we gave some homework around noticing when we had reactionary soothing versus intentional soothing, so we could start to make a list around what we wanted to do instead of that sort of reactionary automatic soothing technique that we might have. In episode 2, we talked about the polyvagal theory and how that is made up of fight and flight and freeze. There is a difference between the freeze and the calm state. And we hear a lot in pop psychology about fight, flight, fawn, and freeze. And so in that episode, I went into my sort of take on what fawn and freeze actually are. But in the polyvagal state, when we're talking about freeze, it is an actual difference between sort of a calm state and then the state where you are actually so overwhelmed that you can no longer fight or flight, and you just sort of get numb and you shut down. And so even if your biomarkers like your heart rate or your blood pressure are low, your brain is taking in a lot less information. And this is a state that we most often associate with depression. But you don't necessarily have to have a depression diagnosis to experience the freeze state. I mean, I just did this morning temporarily when I got a little overwhelmed with all the tasks I had to do. But then I noticed that I was like, oh, here I am opening Facebook again to like watch a video or whatever. And I was like, oh, you know what I should do instead? I should drink some water. I should like take a lap around my house, which I did, and picked up some random stuff that my son had left behind. And then I was able to have a clearer head to actually start solving the problem of the tasks in front of me that were due. In talking about the polyvagal theory, we specifically wanted to talk about how to get into this state of calm creativity. So this is the state when your nervous system is chill enough that you're not only externally calm, but you actually are feeling so good that you can be creative about problem solving around you. So when you're stuck in the state of how did I get here, we want to try and arrive at this sort of relaxed state, not only so we can feel calm and look calm, but also so we can have some creativity around how to get ourselves out of it. And so sometimes we need a little help with that. You know, more often than not, you can get out of the freeze state by doing the things that we talked about in that first episode, drinking water, going for a walk, taking deep breaths, all of that to remind your nervous system to kind of come back online. But sometimes we need a little extra help from our co-regulators. And co-regulation is this cool thing that our nervous system has come up with over time, where when we are feeling a little overwhelmed, we can look to other people around us to kind of take cues for how to be feeling. So you have people that you already co-regulate with, people who are important to you, who are often in close proximity to you. They are part of your immediate family or close friends. And so we look to those people to kind of help us figure out how to calm down, and not in a tactical, like, oh, how are you able to be calm kind of way, but basically our brain is able to clock, oh, that person who I trust and love and takes care of me is also calm, so I can actually start to soothe a little bit too. And I talked about how the people who I often co-regulate with are my partner and my best friend, and how even for my best friend who lives 1,000 miles away from me, I can still co-regulate with him through text messages and tone of voice and all of that. But ultimately, because our brain is so highly visual, it is better for us to be co-regulating with people who are within closer proximity to us, who we see more often. That's why our children often co-regulate best with their parents, because we are the ones that they see the most. And then besides having co-regulators, if we need a little extra boost and we don't have a co-regulator around to help us sort of get back into this calm state, we do often have these spots on our bodies that are regulating super points that are able to help us sort of calm down a little bit easier in those moments when we're by ourselves. And so for some people, those are places that are mine's on my chest. Some people have them on their hands, their necks, their temples. You know, it's not a mistake that people rub their temples a lot when they're feeling overwhelmed. It's a regulating super point for a lot of people. So if you want to, you think about what are the parts on your body that you might inadvertently be touching or massaging or putting pressure on to try and help your body co-regulate. And the biggest thing here is that when we notice ourselves trying to push through regulation, push through soothing as fast as possible, that is a sign that we are doing reactionary soothing as opposed to proactive, intentional soothing. And this is where I got to quote Phil Dunphy from Modern Family, where slow is smooth and smooth is fast. So you want to be slowing down in your soothing, because it's usually the speed is the thing that's showing us that we're not actually soothing in a way that is more sustainable or long-term for us. Okay, so, and we're only through 2 episodes so far, so imagine how dense these episodes were. Go back and listen to them. So then episode 3 was what to do when you have actually like awoken and realized that you're sort of in this state. It's about the triaging, about what to do once you realize you're there. So the first thing that you do is you identify what is the most important thing for you to solve. What is the most important thing to us when we come out of that state? And this is where we have the sort of added complexity of it's not just the thing that superficially feels important to us. It's the thing that when we solve it, it solves multiple problems for us at once. So while there might be a task that feels really, really big to you, the problem might actually be a few layers deeper than the task. And so I talked about using the lean process improvement tactic of the 5 whys. So you ask yourself, why is that important, or why isn't that important? over and over again until you get to sort of often the fourth or fifth layer, you get to the thing that actually, when you solve it, you are able to solve a lot of problems at once. So I use the example of being sick and feeling a little overwhelmed by some work tasks that I had to do. And how I realized by completing a work task, it wasn't necessarily the thing that would solve all of my problems. Why? Because I was having a hard time focusing. Why was I having a hard time focusing? Because I was so sick. And why was I still so sick? Because I wasn't focusing on my recovery. And so that was the thing that I knew I had to do, was actually focus on my recovery so I could then, you know, go up that chain and solve the problem that seemed like the thing that was actually stressing me out. The thing I actually needed to solve was a couple layers deeper. So by asking myself why, I could figure out what that thing was a couple layers deeper. So once you've identified what that thing is that you have to accomplish, then you use everyone's favorite friend, the Eisenhower Matrix, which if you haven't heard of the Eisenhower Matrix, don't worry. You have definitely seen a version of it somewhere out in the world. It's this idea that you're basically categorizing all of your stuff into things that are important, urgent, not important, and not urgent. What this tells you is that you want to focus on taking care of the things that are urgent and important to you. Sometimes we have a tendency to look at things that are urgent and not important. So we want to make sure that we're focusing our intention on the things that are urgent and important. And the way how you can sort of go around the Eisenhower Matrix is you think about what are the things that you need to do because they are urgent and important. Schedule, because they are not urgent, but also important. Delegate, because they are important, but not urgent. And then also delete things that are not urgent and not important. And whether you actually write it out or not, having this idea of I am sorting things by urgency and importance helps us to triage much better so we can actually start addressing things that are causing our nervous system to keep putting us in this state where we're sort of not really focusing on what's happening around us. Now we're at the point where we want to talk about the debrief. So you've managed to do some new nervous system soothing. You've managed to start triaging some things. You might actually be on the other side of this feeling of the how did I get here sort of feeling. And so now we want to talk about how do you prevent this in the future? How do you debrief to prevent this from happening again? The most important thing is that we are going to focus on structure for our prevention. We're going to focus on goals, roles, processes, and resources. And if you want to deep dive into all of those, you go back to season one and listen to those because I pull each of them apart in like really almost painful detail. But it's really important to understand each of those because almost every problem that we need to solve falls into one of those four sort of pieces of structure. In this instance, you're going to start with the thing that you had to focus on the most, the thing that you arrived at because of your five whys. And you're going to start there. So what caused that? What caused that breakdown specifically? And I can guarantee you, it's not personal, like, ugh, I'm so lazy, I'm so gross, I'm so whatever. It is always, always structural unless you are an undiagnosed sociopath, in which case, good luck to you. But for the rest of us, it is structural in nature. So did you lose sight of the goal you wanted to achieve? That could be a goal thing. Did you take on too many roles and responsibilities or not have someone with the right experience or knowledge in a role or not have a good accountability system? That could be a role thing. Were your processes not aligned with your actual needs? Or were you using outdated processes or technology that's too far behind the time? That's a process issue. And then did you have enough resources or use them as intended? So those are just some examples of some of the structure things that we might encounter when we start to look at the structural reasons why we found ourselves in this situation and why we had to solve the sort of root problem that we were looking at. So when I think about my sort of lengthy illness, I identified a process and a resource. My goal, I don't want to get that sick again. It was really rough. I don't want to be that sick again. And it happened in February, which is like prime cold and flu season. I identified a couple of processes that we needed to do and a resource we needed to pull in order to do that. So first, we instituted a process that when we come outside from our house, no matter what we did, even if it was just like, I went downstairs to go, you know, say hello to the neighbors, and then I came back upstairs. No matter what it is, you go wash your hands immediately. You take your shoes off, you drop your bag, you go wash your hands immediately. And we're lucky enough that there's a bathroom right next to our front door. So we got in the habit of teaching our son how to do this. So we come in, he takes off his shoes, he puts his backpack down, and then we immediately go into his bathroom and everyone has a hand washing party. Great. We're going to do that. So notice in there, there was nothing about, oh my gosh, I'm so terrible that I didn't think to wash my hands, or ugh, why am I so gross that I wouldn't remember to wash my hands? It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with just putting a process into place that we noticed could be really helpful for not bringing in as many germs during cold and flu season. So then the second thing that we decided to do is start wiping down high touch surfaces. And this is probably like a bit of wisdom that you've heard before, but I noticed that, you know, in addition to needing to wash our hands, we had, it's so gross, but like our son loves to just like wipe his hand, you know, straight across his nose and like then touch all sorts of things. And, you know, despite our best efforts to tell him, like, use a tissue, cough into your elbow, the reality is children are disgusting. They're so gross. And so there were all these places all over the house that he was touching that, you know, then we would touch and potentially pick up these germs. And so I was like, you know what? We need to actually be wiping down these surfaces regularly, especially because his nose is just kind of constantly running from the cold air. And now we have, you know, it's allergy season because it's springtime at the time of recording. So there's just like snot all over the place all the time. And rather than like hope that the hand washing is enough, you know, look around and realize, oh, this is a thing that easily spreads. And so let's put a process into place to kind of capture those moments. So I assigned myself a role to do regular wipe downs of high touch surfaces. And, oh, you might start hearing Ollie. He's so mad about not being able to be here. He's just like walking around the house yelling. So then I did the organizational development thing of also defining all of the esoteric or multi-definition words in there, in that idea too. I said I needed to regularly wipe down high touch surfaces. So I defined all of that regular, wipe down, and high touch surface. So that meant that for us, a minimum of 2 times a week with a disinfectant wipe, I was wiping down the surfaces that all members of our family touch multiple times a day. That was how I arrived at that. And it sounds, I don't know, I imagine that some of you might be like, wow, that's really intense, Veronica. And like, sure, maybe it is. But now everyone in my house knows what constitutes, you know, a regular wiping down of high touch surfaces. Everyone in my house knows that I want this done at least twice a week. I want us to use a disinfecting wipe. And when we're talking about high touch surfaces, we're not talking about toys or, you know, personal things like silverware, but we're talking about areas like doorknobs, the area around a doorknob, because you don't just touch a doorknob, handles for fridges or drawers that are opened by everyone's. That was how I could identify high touch surfaces, by being clear that it was something that all family members touched multiple times a week. So I don't know if I'll never get sick again. There's a high chance that I won't not ever get sick again. What a double negative to say. But I know that at least I am doing my due diligence to assess this situation and try and prevent it from happening again. You can totally go overboard in this situation. You can try to prevent against all future states that could be coming up related to this. And that is something called anxiety. That is something that can make you really sick and paralyze you. So if you're trying to solve the problem, often the solution is very simple and straightforward. And it's when you start to make it complicated that you're actually starting to give into anxiety responses or getting away from what is actually a simple and sustainable solution to the problem that you're trying to solve. The one thing about humans and human brains is we love to make things complicated. But in reality, a lot of the things that we are trying to solve often have a simple solution. Might not be easy, but it's almost always fairly simple. So we just work with this one instance and we solve one problem at a time. We don't solve one problem and then unpack our backpack of anxiety and then try to figure out how to solve all those problems. In this case, I'm solving the problem of, man, I need to focus on my recovery and prevent getting sick. How do I try and prevent myself from getting sick in the future? I'm going to try these 2 things on and see how that goes. So thus concludes our season of How Did I Get Here? I'd love to know if you use any of the things we talked about, or if you noticed anything about yourself that you're shifting, including your coping mechanisms, and if you use any of the triage or debrief tactics that I described. And remember...
All right, straight through.
I'm so glad you could join me today. Share this episode with someone who you think needs to hear it. Follow me on Instagram @Veronica and sign up for my newsletter at wilhelmconsulting.com.